Our next speaker is Dr. Chris Osborne on implications of high mutation rates and other recent genomic advances on the question of human origins.
Well, greetings. I'm an adjunct from all over the place, including Cal Baptist, but at any rate, my presentation has really two parts to it. First part's to kind of introduce you to a computer program called Mendel's Accountant, and then using that program to then, and comparing findings from that program with the literature to finally get to our question, the question of high mutation rates and genomic advances with human origins. So, Mendel's Accountant. It's a computer program, population genetics program, that's designed like an accounting program and tracks simulated mutations, simulated populations of various fitnesses, of various distributions. It's a very powerful program involving about 36 major parameters, and then there's some parameters that you can control beyond that. But to really run this adequately, you need a really big cluster computer, which I don't happen to have, but thankfully I had access online to one, so I was able to do this. There is a downloadable version on my handout that you can actually download it and run fairly simplified runs with it. You can download it for free. But memory on your laptop is going to be an issue if you're going to do some big simulations. So it allows for testing all kinds of genetic models, all the way from viruses up to bacteria, from viruses up to humans. So let me take you to the first screen of it. On the top left, you see the 10 boxes over here. I'm just going to highlight two of them: your start and plot, and also cases. Start starts the program, opens the screen you see to the right. Plot, once you're done, will give you all kinds of graphic analyses. And cases will allow you to go to other simulations, including others that you've run previously. On the right, top right, we have basic parameters. And there you see your case number, your mutation rate, beneficial to deleterious ratio, which is shown quite low there at basically a 10th of 1% with a mutation rate of 10. This is the default. You change it to anything you want. Reproduction rate of 2, which means every individual will give rise to 2. So our population of 1,000, I have it set to keep it at 1,000. Just simple default sort of run here. So it's going to double to 2,000, and then we're going to select it down back to 1,000 each generation for 500 generations. And then the bottom feature there is right there, it's advanced settings. You click that, and now you get all these choices along here, mutation to computation. So, sorry about that. So, looking at, so first advanced, so-called advanced setting mutations. Now, this has quite a number of sub-settings, 14 in all. Basically, I'll just highlight a couple of them. It's set for the human genome. Right here, we have functional equals actual minus junk. So here, the assumption is 90% junk DNA, and therefore 10% of our genome. So 10% of 3 billion nucleotides would be 300 million. So that's the assumption there. That's from recent results, probably is pretty much bogus. Junk DNA keeps dropping down till last call it was at about 10% is junk DNA. And they said, you know, bad idea, bad word. We should never have invented it. Drop it. Forget we ever mentioned it. All right, that's kind of what's happened at finding polyfunctionality with genes, that we don't even know what a gene is anymore. Each one averaged 7 transcripts per supposed gene. So we don't even know what to call it anymore. So the more I learn, the more I find out I don't know very much at all. And it seems to decrease all the time. So anyway, there's that. And these parameters here basically define your curve. How beneficial are the beneficials? How deleterious are deleterious? How many are there? And, you know, how is that going to curve? And basically, if you're familiar with the neutral hypothesis, this is Kimura's curve pretty much represented here, and it comes out pretty much that way. Then there's other features, which I will skip. And then we get to the next one, is selection. And I'll highlight two items there. First is the heritability, which is what percent of characteristics are actually inheritable. You know, what things can natural selection actually get to? And what are things like, well, I'm fortunate I was born in the United States and not in Bangladesh. You know, I can't inherit the genes to land in Bangladesh or here. And that has a lot to do with our survival. So, at any rate, the default's at 20%, but we'll manipulate that shortly. And then we have type of selection. We can have artificial truncated selection or more naturalistic type of selection. Whoops, yeah, said not to point up. There we go. Okay, for population, we have chromosome number, linkage groups, those are important, and then type of, here I have it set for the default, which is fixed population size. But you can see at the bottom right there, we have a few other choices there that we can choose from. Then we get to structure, and this is talking about subpopulations primarily. So this is set for two subpopulations, and you can have different models you can choose from and different degrees of impact one has upon another and rates of migration and so forth. So there's those. And then finally, things that I'm not terribly usually interested in, I should have been in one of my runs, and that is computation. And this deals with the, we talked about random number. Well, there's our random number generator. And if you don't want exactly the same results each time you do the same simulation, you better change that. So, anyway, enough said about that. So, when you first turn on the start of simulation, you hit the start button, you get these four graphs pop up. And then you get a running total of what's going on with generations that are being simulated. Here we have a population of 1,000, and we're on generation 180 here. This is fitness, about almost 86%. That's before selection, and about 86, just a little bit better after selection for that generation. Because it's only 20% is actually being selectable by natural selection in this simulation. And when it's all done, which could take anywhere from about a minute to many days, even on the big cluster supercomputer, because we're following every nucleotide on every individual, plus all their linkages for 1,000 individuals in this case, for all these generations. And it's really data intense. And each has its own fitness values. Anyway. So there's four graphs, and then we're ready to go to our plot button right there. We click on the plot button, and now we get, first of all, just go real quickly through, this is the default run, and we're going to use that as our standard to compare it with other runs. Default key features, we have 10 mutations per person per generation. We have the beneficials divided by deleterious mutations, actually neutrals and deleterious, would be 0.01%. So out of the 10 mutations, we'd expect then 9.999 deleterious to 0.001 favorable. So out of a population of 1,000, we're getting one favorable per generation. Okay, so that's, again, the default, we'll change that shortly. And so about reproductive rate, 1,000 individuals, 500 generations. And that's all I'll say about that for now. So here's our first graph, and you can see these options. We have mutations through alleles. I'm going to go through them very quickly. Mutations, we start here at the bottom, 500 generations. We're almost to 5,000 per individual. Okay, if there was no selection, that should be right at 5,000. So selection has brought that down a little bit. And although quantitatively it hasn't brought it down very much, qualitatively it's brought it down substantially because it's impacting primarily high impact mutations. It's those neutrals and near neutrals that are rather untouchable. But the more generations you have, the more touchable it becomes. Next one, this is our fitness. We see we start with a fitness of one, and over time, because of mutation accumulation, that diminishes to about 76% after 500 generations. And then here's a breakdown of where selection is affecting this. At the high impact zone, you can see selection's pretty much knocked those out. But the low impact zone, you see selection can't do a thing. Random genetic drift is ruling, even in a population the size of 1,000, which from a population genetics point of view is infinite as far as random genetic drift goes. For beneficials, there's just too few to do any statistics with, because we have particular selection was a very low rate. Realistically, but still low. An interesting statistic, which no time to tell you about, but a brand new statistic's come out called selection threshold. And the short of it is, the more generations, the more effective natural selection is. And then we look at individual alleles and their frequencies. And we see, we have a classic Kimura curve, neutralist curve here. We have very few high-impact deleterious mutations and lots of neutrals or near-neutral range, the non-selectable range. The beneficials, we just don't have enough data. It tries to graph it, but it's useless. There's not enough data to make anything meaningful out of that. Okay, that's individual alleles. We can also look at clusters of alleles because, in fact, within the human genome, there are groups of alleles that, through crossing over, have never been separated. Never. They are linked together. And so we've defined linkage groups at almost 1,000 to start the simulation. And what we have is now we're looking at a sum total of all the plus and minus alleles on each of those linkages. And what we find is that, well, because of so much many more negative than positive, these negatives get linked to the positive and sync the positives. You know, we got a positive, it's going to be selected, but then it gets linked with a negative. Now you've got to take the bad with the good. And so that's kind of how that works. And so now we have a graph showing what happens before and after selection with 20% selection rate. Before selection, let's see. It's just the red. The red shows just before. That's the population of 1,000 goes up to 2,000. Then we got selected down back to a 1,000. So the red is the 2,000 before selection. The green is the 1,000 after selection. And so you can see the curve is shifting slightly to the right because that's the more favorable direction. Natural selection favors that. And then looking at allele frequencies, we start with brand new rare alleles on the left, and then we see a little bit of polymorphism starting to kick in. And if they go all the way to the right there, they became fixated or replaced the originals. With 500 generations and a population size of 1,000, you're just not going to get any fixation. You need smaller numbers and more generations. But anyway, that's the default, and that's what it shows. Okay, now quick comparisons. On the left, we have the default. And with the heritability of 20%, let's up that to 80%. Keep everything else the same. What happens? Fitness at the end of 500 generations is right under 76%. Fitness increased to 80% selection. We only come up just barely above 76%. Statistically, it was not even significant change. What happened? Well, again, quantitatively, it didn't make much effect. But qualitatively, it had a lot of effect because it's the high impact ones that are being knocked out. But still, the overall fitness is hardly touched. And that's because we have 10 mutations per person per generation. For natural selection to keep up with that, it would have to eliminate everyone to keep up with it, right? Because one mutation per person per generation or more, and that means we all have one, and to get rid of them means we all have to die and we're extinct. So population geneticist, especially Haldane back in 1957, pointed that out, is that human population mutation rates have to be under, well under one per person per generation, or mutation accumulation will sink us, will be ultimate extinction. But recent results show that this is way over 1. It's more like 100. Okay, next variable. Let's keep the default the same. Keep it to the left. And this time we're going to increase the population size and generation number. So that means we're going to have a fairly long run as far as memory here. So from 1,000 to 5,000 individuals, and from 500 generations to 5,000. So what happens? After the first 500 generations with increased population, our fitness is 0.761 compared to 0.757. So statistically, it's equal. On the right, with more generations, though, with 5,000 generations, we've gone from about 76% down to a little bit under 52%. So, you know, we're losing, but at a slower rate. Okay, now up to mutation rates. This is all the literature, and these, in my opinion, and that's not much, but from what I've seen and from talking with others, it seems like these are pretty much probably the best studies, the most reliable data we have. Back when Neil and company came up with 30 mutations per generation, they said, they can't be, there's something wrong. That's too high. Well, they said, well, yeah, it's high, but really that's a conservative number. And later results seem to vindicate that. With more recent times, with better technology and better efforts, in my opinion, we come up with higher numbers. Notice, 75, and then 100 to 300, and then probably Lynch's may be the best at 60 to 175. So let's now increase our mutation rate from the 10 per person per generation up to 100. Total mutations. So these are going to be mostly neutral. Or when I say neutral, I believe actually there's no such thing as neutral. Okay. Neutral is just neutral with respect to selection. It's undetectable by selection is really what we're saying. Okay, so. And what we get here is that here's our default run again on the left, and then something's got to be wrong here because, look, we're extinct in 206 generations. 20 years a generation, that's only 4,000. This is over 4,000 years. Okay, so that, you know, something's fishy there, right? That can't be. So, okay, but we put the 100 in there, and possibly because maybe all the genome is not equally sensitive to selection. But anyway, there's a lot of possibilities. There's so many variables here that, you know, this is just as kind of a give it our best shot type of thing. Okay, favorable frequency. I wish I could have had a chance to see poster session earlier. This is limited information I have about favorable mutation rates. Bergman did a looked at almost 500,000 through literature search, 500,000 mutations, and of those, 186 were identified as beneficials. But in case of all 186 beneficials, yes, but no new information, and in every case in which a mechanism could be discerned, the beneficials either meant a loss of information, like antibiotic resistance of bacteria mutations and insecticide resistance, insects that are resistant to insecticides, or they didn't know, or trivial modulation where they're, okay, you tweak a protein and now it's more effective at a higher or lower temperature or a pH or something like that. Yeah, actually, I've given the 2-minute warning, but I'll come right back to the questions, okay? This is a sum total of every mutation they could find. And so now we increase then the favorable to, instead of a 100th of 1%, let's bring it up to 1%. 1 out of every 100 is actually beneficial. All the rest are neutral and detrimental. And so what we get is basically we're down to 11% fitness in 500 generation, which would be just 10,000 years. Okay, so now let's increase the beneficiality of these beneficials. And so we pump that up to that one single point mutation can be worth 10% of the fitness of the entire organism. And the other 3 billion nucleotides will be the other 90%. So doing that, and that tweaks the whole curve over. And now finally we drop down and we actually make a comeback. But that's only 500 generations. So I thought, okay, let's increase the number of generations now with the same setting. And this is what we get. Okay, it drops down, starts coming back up, but then you can see the beneficial, high impact beneficial, and then you get a drop, and then another high impact beneficial, another drop. Those drops represent where negative mutations are being linked to those positive ones. And so that's what's going on there. And so Lynch summarizes in his study that mutation rates in our body is about 1 to 5 per cell per cell division. Average 15-year-old, about 6,000 or up to 6,000 mutations. Skin cells, 60-year-old, up to 40,000 mutations. That would be me. And that mutations are a primary cause of aging and death. And that's I've seen since that all over the place. So he concludes that there's little potential for substantially increasing our lifespan. That was the goal of the study. You know, how much could we possibly live under perfect conditions? And his conclusion was, well, we're just about already there. So he predicts then next few generations, significant incapacitation, morphological, physiological, neurological levels. And that Crow says we're inferior to caveman. Kondrakoff, no human geneticist doubts man degenerating. And Lynch says, even assuming lower mutation rates, we're degenerating at 1 to 5% per generation. At 1% in 100 generations, we're extinct. That's only 2,000 years. Okay, so I think that Lynch may be a bit wrong on that, in that just like you saw Mendel's account, as it dropped down, it slows down, doesn't it? And I think he's doing a linear kind of thing here. So, but at any rate, we are degenerating. That seems to be everyone's. So the genetic, at least entropy at the individual level, seems to be undisputed as far as I know. But is there, from a Christian point of view, is there hope in this? Absolutely. The creation was subject to futility in hopes that the creation itself would be set free from its slavery of corruption. For this perishable us, who know him, must put on the imperishable, and mortal must put on immortality. And that's where it all gets fixed. Thank you. Okay. And now, is this ready?
Questions for Chris. Time for a couple of regulars.
Does this computer count for back to reverting back to wild type? And therefore, does it matter if it was obtained goes back to normal?
Good question. Actually, there it doesn't. In fooling with it, it doesn't seem to make much difference. But there is an actual one of those 36 parameters is for reverse mutations. Actually, that's not one that I've messed with. I was told it doesn't seem to affect very much. And I wanted things that impacted things a lot. Yes.
We want to clarify: Crow and those guys, they do believe that in an industrialized world, mutations are too late, but that's only because natural selection is shut off. Because people have two kids, and they keep a limit to having six kids and one kid survive. So basically,
right. Yes, now the mutation rates that I showed you were global, not just industrialized. But also, okay. No, I didn't know that. But I'm not surprised, because I know Crow doesn't believe that, he believes we're going to go on and on. I'm familiar with Crow in other respects. I mean, he's a molecules demand evolutionist. I mean, he's is about as much as anybody is alive. So, yes, he's not. But at any rate, nevertheless, he does share degeneration, and the program seems to show that with such a high mutation rate, natural selection, no matter what we do, if we try to do eugenics, it's just a drop in the bucket. We might as well try to bail out the Titanic with a child's, sand bucket.
Okay, our last question.
Yeah, it's kind of long been thought that Americans are healthier because they did away with tribalism, both European, Asian, and African tribalism. And some recent studies have shown that now that we have a lot of interracial kids, that their health is better than the non-interracial kids. So does your program take that into consideration?
Well, that's not my program, by the way. I wish I could have. There's a lot I don't know about that program on the computational end. I'm kind of like the kid who knows how to use the computer but doesn't know what's inside. But at any rate, yeah, I think it's kind of interesting, too. You look at look at the Hebrew culture from, Abraham married who? His half-sister. Isaac and Jacob, the first cousins. There are a lot of, closely inbred from early on, and doesn't seem to be huge genetic consequences. But over time, we do that now, and it's complete disastrous. And that seems to reflect to me that even within historical times, mutation accumulation seems to be really real, and now its consequences are much larger. And we seem to be heading, as Mendel and these studies seem to point to, that we are degenerating very quickly, and that inbreeding may just be a foreshadow of what's happening, kind of a future look, a preview of what's happening to our whole population not too long from now.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Great. Our next speaker is Deborah Sayapong. Her talk will be